From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, illegal gain and unconstitutional legislating, protecting our historical monuments, and the indoctrination of children. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. With Family Research Council President Tony Perkins out this week, guest host Sarah Perry discussed a wide range of topics, and we'll begin today's show with Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who talked with Sarah about how some things in government aren't working the way the founders intended.
Senator Rubio, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, sir.
So how did Planned Parenthood get their hands on this much money that was ostensibly supposed to go to employers with 500 or fewer employees? We know that there are affiliate Planned Parenthood operations all over the United States. How does something like this happen?
Well, that's a great question. And it's one of the things we've been asking of the SBA, and that is, you know, who authorized these loans to be made when it was clear they didn't meet the affiliation rules? I mean, irrespective of their mission, which I disagree with, is their structure. And their structure is one in which the parent company has tremendous control. You cannot be a Planned Parenthood affiliate without the approval and without meeting the direction of the board of directors of an organization in Washington, D.C. that is sitting on tens of millions of dollars in revenue every year. And so these affiliates fall under the direct control of that parent organization, and as such are not independent affiliates. They're not like a McDonald's franchise that's owned independently by an individual. Mm-hmm. And they can't hire people. They can't conduct practices without the approval. I mean, they are directed. They are the epitome of what does not meet affiliation requirements. And so the fact that they got the money is disturbing. Someone should have spotted that and stopped it and asked questions. Process that's going to begin, and I hope the Treasury will be very firm about it, as well as the SBA. You know, I think this question of affiliation is going to be important and hopefully will be looked at both on legal grounds and on regulatory grounds.
So you've led the charge in requesting an investigation, directing it at AG Barr. Has there been a response, and are you hopeful that this investigation is looming on the horizon?
I am hopeful that it's looming. I haven't had a response, but that's not unusual from the Justice Department, because they don't usually write you a letter to say we're going to begin an investigation. They begin an investigation, and usually they don't publicize those things as they start. Eventually people find out it works its way into the public domain. I am more disturbed that the SBA has not been more responsive about the mm-hmm. sort of examination of this. I have reason to believe that they too are looking at it, how it happened, and what their options are from a regulatory standpoint. But as of yet, you know, we haven't seen the sort of proactive public measures that you would want to see. What's clear is, in my mind, is that Planned Parenthood wants this fight, and that they have plenty of allies in the broader media who are going to be protective of them. I mean, they'll go after, you know, a business that sells hamburgers like Shake Shack or what have you. They'll really jump on those guys, but they won't go after an organization such as this, because it falls within sort of the orthodoxy. And they'll overlook that sort of deal. So it's unfortunate, but it's not one we're going to give up on. We're going to keep pushing on it. I think most people would be outraged if they learned that this organization, which is very well-funded, received these funds.
Well, it's an organization that makes really very little noise about the fact that they are indeed profit-driven. They can say anything that they want about being motivated by women's health care, but the fact of the matter is they are an industry. They are a money-printing organization. They care most about profitability, as is evidenced by the fact that they have opposed every common-sense legislative measure that is designed to make abortion itself less common, more rare, safer even for the individuals who take place in this actual procedure. They care about one thing, and it's profitability. And this really sets them up, I think, perfectly for an election season fight. If they have a sense that the Republicans are trying to wrestle back some of their, quote, hard-earned paycheck protection program funds, it really sets them up as perfect ideologues in the argument for why abortion is necessary and how hard they're having to fight to protect that right. So kudos to you and to your staff for running point on an investigation request like this, because that hard-earned money, and we know obviously the SBA, so many false starts trying to get the program up and operational. We understand it's a pandemic. We understand this is a new platform, but there were a lot of false starts and misfires as the program got rolled out. It seems to me that Planned Parenthood took that as an opportunity to make hay, as it were, and get their hands on some of this Paycheck Protection Fund.
Yeah, I don't think they needed the money. I think they looked for the fight, and I think they feel like anytime they can get a fight like this going, they're going to have allies rally to their side. And, you know, I think what is lamentable here is that there are healthcare practitioners out there who did not qualify for these funds. You know, there are mm-hmm. hospitals and others who actually needed the money and were actually saving people's lives as opposed to taking lives. And and you know, they didn't get the money, and it's unfortunate. But it's a fight. You know, they want a fight. They're going to have one, and hopefully this will work out the way it should.
Well, speaking of fights on abortion specifically, I'm thinking about the June Medical Services case and how really Justice Roberts has become sort of the new Kennedy. He has sort of begun to side with the liberal majority and a lot of the decisions that conservatives and textualists felt were absolutely out of left field. We had a number of letdowns, June Medical among them. And again, common sense regulation. This is a law requiring physicians to perform abortions within a 30-mile radius of a hospital wherein they have admitting privileges, naturally, in case something goes wrong. And I think we were all slack-jawed thinking that this common sense law in Louisiana was going to be upheld. Are you as surprised as we are about what we've seen from Justice Roberts this Supreme Court term?
Well, you know, not only surprised, but really deeply disappointed. Look, I think we have a fundamental problem when we talk about the court in America today, and that is this growing view among people that the court is just is a political branch, mm-hmm. that it is their job to sort of pass laws and make policy, specifically policies that Congress won't make or the president won't make, and so they kind of sit there as sort of the backstop to make policies and reach policy outcomes. The Supreme Court is an appellate court. It is not a policy-making branch. Although its rulings end up in resulting in policy, that is not their role. Their role is to examine the case before them and to determine whether or not the action taken or before them violates the Constitution of the United States or whether an error was made by a lower court. And it seems oftentimes when you start to read some of these opinions, you can sense in it that you've got this effort to reach an outcome on a policy front.
Yes.
And then they really go through these verbal gymnastics to sort of justify how they got to that policy decision, but in the end it was a policy decision. And you had a number of rulings in this cycle that sort of read that way, and it's very disturbing. You know, we've worked very hard to appoint two new justices to the court. We've obviously think it's great progress, and yet we've been told so many times that this is one of the reasons why it's so critical we have these majorities, and yet to have an outcome like this tells you that we still have work to do in that regard. Not because we want them, sometimes they're going to rule, you know, in ways that don't reach their policy outcome that I may want, but I just want them to play their proper role in our system of government and our republic, which
yes.
is not to write law, but to interpret it and apply it.
Absolutely. And absolutely interpret it as it is written by the plain text meaning of the actual legislation at the time. And I think that's why Bostock, for so many of us, particularly those of us who are women, to find ourselves on the same and equal footing, again, equal in air quotes, as somebody who identifies as being a woman, and that being the interpretation of Title VII as passed in 1964, we found flabbergasting. So are you hopeful that maybe things will turn around a bit based on where the Supreme Court might be headed? And does this make a continued case for getting strength back in the judiciary for originalists, for textualists who are going to simply take the letter of the law as written and not infuse their own desires?
Well, I think that does two things. The first is it tells you how important this upcoming election will be, because if we don't mm-hmm. have the Senate and the White House, and another vacancy becomes available in the next 4 years, we won't have the ability to provide that additional crucial vote. We're now obviously further, we're still one vote shy of having that kind of court. But the other thing that it does is it highlights the importance of nominating people like this who are smart and qualified to the lower courts, because they ultimately become the pool of candidates available to you And in that front, I'm very proud, not just here in Florida, but across the country, of the quality of these jurists that are getting onto the courts at both the appellate and the trial level. These are young originalists who understand the proper role of the courts in our federal system, and are going to be, in my mind, future candidates for the court down the road. And so it kind of calls attention to both things, the continuation of building that bench that we're going to have to turn to when the time presents itself.
You can find out more about Marco Rubio when you visit TonyPerkins.com. And I want to let you know that even in these challenging times in our country, it is an honor to serve you and your family through this broadcast. Every day, FRC experts work on multiple fronts to uphold biblical truth and equip citizens like you to engage the culture. There is much work to be done, and your timely gift can make all the difference. Visit TonyPerkins.com to help us fulfill our mission to be your voice for biblical principles and impact even more lives with the truth. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
On April 16th, President Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force announced a three-phase plan with guidelines for how states can begin scaling back restrictions. Here at Family Research Council, we have summarized the White House plan to help churches in the reopening process. Check out our resource, What Pastors Should Know About the White House Plan to Open Up America Again. It offers practical guidelines for how houses of worship can begin to operate safely as our country reopens. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to learn more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. During the recent riots across our country, protesters have taken to destroying any monument they could get their hands on. The president, however, moved to give jail time to anyone convicted of destroying a monument. Joining guest host Sarah Perry to talk about what the government is doing to protect these landmarks is the U.S. Secretary of the Interior, David Bernhardt.
Secretary Bernhardt, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me to participate.
Listen, as a student of history and as a mother who is concerned with my children's remembrance of history, I'm deeply concerned by what I see as the vandalization and the outright refutation of the legacies represented by these statues and these memorials. And your plan intersects now based on the fact that there are some federal memorials that have themselves been attacked there in D.C. So talk a little bit about what your plan is moving forward to seek justice and protect our national monuments.
Well, the president has really taken some bold action in two principal ways. First, he recognizes that America owes its present greatness to its past sacrifices. And I think he was deeply troubled by the actions that are taking place. So first, to the criminals that want to destroy these monuments and memorials, he's been very clear, and he's basically issued direction to us and to the Department of Justice that says, look, investigate these crimes, prosecute these people to the full extent of the law, bring the entire force of the federal government to pay great heed to these. And what people need to know, the criminals that commit these crimes need to know, are there are severe, very severe penalties. Severe penalties, up to 10 years in prison in certain cases, and also tremendous financial consequences. And we are rounding up these bad actors. Many of them love video cameras, and they're finding out that those are difficult to deal with in the evidence room. But the reality is we're rounding those people up. So on one hand, he's been very forceful of saying we're not going to tolerate this. Right. On the other hand, he said, look, these statues of stone and steel are really silent teachers, and we need to do a better job as America making sure that America's story is told. And he created a task force made up of myself, along with the head of the National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment of the Arts, a whole host of people to say, look, we want you to create a American Heroes Park and put statues in the park so that these memories won't be forgotten. We also want a greater commissioning of additional statues and memorials, and we need to be very aggressive as these things are coming down to being restoring them and recasting them, and let's protect our history. And as a matter of fact, just an hour ago, we finished up the first task force meeting. So the president gave us clear direction on the 3rd. We're already in the middle of working through these issues. We're going to prosecute these people. We're going to investigate these crimes. We're also going to move forward making sure that no one forgets the great contributions the wonderful United States and exceptional people from the United States have given to our world.
And somehow American exceptionalism has become a dirty word. It is sort of phrase non grata at this point, when in fact our nation is made up of fallible but exceptional individuals who, as is the nature of humanity, are fraught with their own complexities and their own shortcomings and their own failures. And yet the American principles, the founding ideals, still endure. And again, as a mom, as someone who's concerned with the fact that 80% of American high school and middle school students are, for the most part, failing their civics and their history and their government lessons, I'm concerned about the memorialization of these important figures in history. I would imagine that we are in a technological age and that the function of wanting to film everything probably does a little bit of benefit to the Department of the Interior, and here recently to the U.S. Park Police, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, those films will be extremely helpful to us in terms of, you know, if you take a selfie as you're committing a crime, that's an awkward thing. I mean, let's just be honest about it. But you're so precisely correct on the reality that we had such exceptional American citizens who, despite their flaws, took their talent, their energy, and put it in service to our country or in service to humanity, and whether it's in government, art, medicine. We have tremendous leaders to inspire us. And, you know, I have the great privilege of being the caretaker in our nation's parks. And when somebody walks through American history, they leave inspired, okay? They do.
Yeah.
And we have such a wonderful country. We've done so much for humanity. And we still, to this day, are inspiring people, and we just have this mob out there that's out of control, and then unfortunately people are embracing, certain politicians are embracing these values that are completely an anathema to our country.
You can find out more about Secretary Bernhardt when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. Just visit tonyperkins.com and click on the donate button. That's tonyperkins.com.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Join a Stand Courageous Men's Conference near you and tackle the critical aspects of masculinity. It's led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you as a man. Join us at one of our upcoming events. Learn more at standcourageous.com.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics? And how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? Family Research Council's new second edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to these questions to help you navigate the political landscape this election year. To access this important resource, visit frc.org/engage.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday, as debate was raging across the country about whether or not public schools should open in the fall, FRC's Senior Fellow for Legal Studies and the Director of Human Dignity, Kathy Roos, joined guest host Sarah Perry to talk about how public schools are indoctrinating children.
Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm so glad to be with you.
All right. I want to start a little bit with a contrast here between the current administration, who has made parental control in education a priority, whose education secretary, Betsy DeVos, has prioritized school choice and vouchers so that parents are not relegated. They are not funneled into a government school system if they choose not to be. And Joe Biden, who is, unsurprisingly, the NEA's pick for president. Let's listen to what Biden said recently.
This is going to be a teacher-oriented Department of Education, and it's not going to come from the top down. It's come from the teachers up. You don't just have a partner in the White House. You'll have an NEA member in the White House.
Okay, so excuse me if I'm wrong here, but I do believe that the raison d'etre of education is for kids, right? It's not for teachers. Teachers work for kids. And as an NEA representative in the White House, it does curdle the blood a little bit. Are we surprised at all that there is an indoctrination funnel now into a lot of these public schools, Kathy?
Well, we're not. But I have to say I'm grateful that some of this is coming out, even, you know, through candidate Joe Biden.
Yes.
Thank you for being honest. What we are learning.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the National Education Association, the largest teachers lobby, is really the worst of the worst. It's in bed with Planned Parenthood. It's in bed with the Human Rights Campaign. It's pushing all the volatile, progressive, activist, rioting kind of messages on schools, including, of course, the very destructive transgender ideology on public school kids. So it's a very destructive force, but it's extremely powerful, and it is responsible for and pushing, really, ideology in public schools. And that is not the place for politics. Of course not.
Well, and we know that the NEA convention, in addition to being sort of a soup of leftist ideologies last year, it was their premiere of a drag queen show at the NEA convention, you know, where teachers go to learn about teacher things, right? So why a drag queen show would be appropriate boggles the mind, but also indicates where a lot of this material, where a lot of this influence and ideology is coming from. So you've written a great piece on sex ed and sort of the nefarious ways that it's not just presented in health class, and it is not just the birds and the bees, but this is really sort of the hammer by which the left breaks down the door on a lot of this sexual politicking. So talk about that a little.
Well, yeah, Sarah, what I learned, I mean, we have been hearing from parents at Family Research Council about how graphic and inappropriate sex ed had become. But when I started digging into it for the publication that we recently issued, what I saw was all of these big international powerful lobby groups getting involved in sex ed. Why? The Southern Poverty Law Center is involved in it. The Human Rights Campaign is involved in it. Planned Parenthood is involved in it. You know, other big, giant international corporations. And that's because sex ed is such a good tool for these groups to do their cultural Marxism, to do their cultural change in schools. And, you know, the leader of sex ed in the United States is CICIS, which is the Sexual Information Education Council of the U.S., and it has just changed its name to Sex Ed for Social Change. What does that mean? According to them, sex ed is an opportunity to shift the culture on issues like LGBTQ equality, white supremacy, reproductive justice, which means abortion, racial justice. All of these things are now packed into sex ed. They're baked into sex ed in public schools today.
Well, it is sort of the lifeblood of a lot of these public schools. And unfortunately, when a lot of the material is presented whole cloth, as we know, the SPLC is wants to do through their teaching tolerance platform, which a few years ago, they said 500,000 educators had access to this material, which again is an entire panoply of left-wing ideologies from, as you mentioned, racial justice to Black Lives Matter to police brutality to sensitivity regarding Islamophobia, not Christian sensitivity, not true religious liberty, as it were, because it seems to me that the SPLC has a tendency to pick and choose the Constitution. But really, when they are delivered in this perfect, polished platform to the individual teachers and school administrators who are already overworked and in this particular environment, struggling with how to adapt to the online module now that we're in the midst of a COVID pandemic, it would seem pretty easy to gobble this all up. So what are some alternatives for some of these hamstrung parents who feel like, listen, we don't even know how to manage online education. Let us figure out a way to kind of get out of the indoctrination while at the same time maybe ensuring that we've got the classifications and the requirements of a school or an educational format that is actually going to help promote our values and promote educational excellence, two of which we don't always see through the public school system.
That's right. Well, this is right now the best possible opportunity for parents to look at alternatives. One of my favorite new alternatives that I discovered is something called hybrid homeschool, and that is where kids are homeschooled a couple days of the week, and then 3 days they go into a classroom atmosphere with other homeschooled kids. Something like hybrid homeschool, which is a fraction of the cost of private school, is attracting really, really high quality teachers. These are people that have had careers in the various fields of whatever it is, science, physics, government, and now they want a more flexible career. And so they are beginning to teach at these really creative, interesting new schools. And these schools are being started by parents who are simply fed up with failing schools and want to see excellence for their kids. So I would encourage parents to look into hybrid homeschools, you know, and the homeschool co-op. I mean, I myself, we send our kids to private schools. It's a huge burden, financial burden, but I know that not every family can do that. But there are more and more options that are financially more doable now for families than they think, more than you realize. So once you start scratching the surface on education alternatives, you'll be surprised what's out there for parents.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.